I'd like to call to order the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee meeting for February 11th, 2025 at 4 o'clock PM. Notification of item number two, notification of open meetings, act posting and announcement of meeting procedure. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414, is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations, then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. And we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Davidson?
Here.
Bourbon?
Here.
Storm?
Yes.
Thompson?
Here.
And Chairman?
Here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So move.
Got a motion?
Second.
And a second. We have proof of publication. Roll call. Sorry.
Bourbon?
Here.
Storm?
Here.
Thompson?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye. We have item number five, proof of publication of meeting notice will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, Eastern Nebraska Water Resources Assessment Presentation, Philip Pates and Katie Camera, NRA.
Good afternoon, directors. I have with me Katie Cameron with the Conservation Survey Division at UNL, and she's our lead principal for the NRA group that we're a part of, along with some of our other partner NRDs, the state of Nebraska. And she's going to share with you some of the work that we've done in the last year, some of the developments, and kind of some of the data collection that we do. It really kind of helps us to inform us what our geology is under our feet, what our resources are, and the impacts that there could be. And so, with that, I have Katie Cameron.
Thank you. We try to get out to the NRDs every other year to give an update on what's been going on. So today, I'm just going to give a refresher on our regional setting in the groundwater in eastern Nebraska for some of the newer members. We'll go over our partnership structure as NRA. Many of you are aware of all the airborne electromagnetic surveys or AEM surveys. I'll kind of give you a background on that and where we're at today with all that. We'll go over the new website. We just did get a new website in July, and then some of our recent grant project highlights. We were at the legislative conference a couple weeks ago and had a trade show room over there, and I've seen some of you at that conference, so I'll just kind of highlight one of our recent projects there. Go over the upcoming schedule and then our drilling and geophysics cooperative agreement with CSD. So I am a UNL CSD hydrogeologist, and 60% of my position is funded by the NRA group, so I'm specific for eastern Nebraska. So just a reminder, eastern Nebraska, you can see on this map, you're familiar, there's a lot of different things going on in eastern Nebraska. You can see right away, you can see the light blue is the High Plains Aquifer System, so western Nebraska, totally different than eastern Nebraska. It has that Ogallala Aquifer that goes all the way down to Texas. That's the light blue you see on here. The green hatching is like recent river and stream valleys, alluvial aquifer systems, where a lot of people are getting their water near surface, readily available. Your district, you can see, has the Missouri River floodplain. It also has that Platte and Elkhorn area where the High Plains Aquifer is kind of drawn into eastern Nebraska. Anywhere where the water's connected into that Ogallala system is kind of where they draw that blue line. I'd like to point out the pink, which is the paleo channel aquifers. So similar to the stream valleys today, ancient river systems cut down into the bedrock and then filled with sand and gravels. And now many of the areas are covered in thick glacial till. So that's another reason eastern Nebraska looks completely different. Tens of thousands of years ago to 1.2 million years ago, glaciers came and advanced into Nebraska, dumped a variety of materials of fine grain up to boulder-sized sediments in no particular order, so it's very difficult to assess and map out where the geometry and thickness of the aquifers and how they're interacting with the surface water. And then also the Dakota aquifer, which is the brown hatch you see on here. That is a very important secondary bedrock aquifer, especially for your district here. And up in the northeast corner, you can see that orange. That's a younger Cretaceous aquifer, but the Dakota is at the bottom of the Cretaceous, so it's like 100 million years old. It was a beach on the Western Interior Seaway when they had tidal flats and things like that. So it's also very complicated with a lot of different clay, silt, sandstone. This is just to get you thinking below ground surface, so everything we do pretty much feet in elevation on the left, and then we're looking below ground. This is an example across the northern part of Nebraska from west to east. You can see the elevation kind of goes downhill, and then you can see that light blue that we had on the previous map is the darker blue on here, that High Plains aquifer system, how it kind of pinches out to the east. And then on the east side, you can see the loess and glacial sediments on top. That's on top of the Cretaceous. That K you see is mostly shale and non-aquifer material, but the Dakota I mentioned is the Maha aquifer, where it's good quality water. You can see is coming up in elevation to the east. And that blue hatch there, that's the coverage area. So your district has, you can see the Dakota are good quality water. And if you're familiar with Lincoln at all in the saline wetlands, you know there is salt water in the Dakota in that sandstone. But for the most part in your district, you have more of the better quality. And in the northeast, there's also sulfate problems with the Dakota and higher TDS, too. So now, basically just NRA overview, Lewis and Clark NRD, your district, Lower Elkhorn, Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, and Nemaha. You can see on this map inset here, with all the complexities I mentioned with the glaciers coming and advancing, that red dashed line you can see there, that's the limit as far as those ice sheets came into Nebraska. But the tan you see on this map is the glacial till deposits, and they can be up to like 300 feet thick in some areas. And like I said, they might be on top of paleo channels, very difficult. So these six NRDs got together in 2006 to form an interlocal agreement and work together with the agencies and experts in the state. So your Water Science Center, USGS in Lincoln, your CSD or your State Geological Survey, my entity, Nebraska Department of Environment and Energy, which they're not on here, but they are technically a partner in Department of Natural Resources. So. We're organized in these interlocal agreements that renew every 5 years. We're in the fourth renewal of those five-year sets, and we're in year three of that. And we try to keep the coordinator position, my position, on that same cycle every 5 years to keep them together. We have our technical committee, which is the water staff of those six NRDs, and then the managers for each of those six NRDs, and then the technical advisor. So that's kind of our organization. And we've had the same objectives from day one. This is just a full list here of identifying those location volume aquifers, recharge, groundwater surface water interaction, water budgets, water quality concerns, analyzing, distributing data, and then, of course, applicability of new technology. So that's what I'll get into next with the airborne surveys. But I want to draw attention to the three red boxes on this map. Those were our initial pilot study sites, Oakland, Ashland, and Firth. The Ashland block goes from kind of Gretna area across the Platte River. That's the one that's in your district. We'll look at more about that later. But that's kind of at the very beginning. We just tried all these different tool sets, and it happened to be the airborne. So on the right, you see this torpedo-looking instrument. That was the equipment, the frequency domain electromagnetic surveys that we did early on at those pilot study sites and then up to about the 2012 drought time. And then USGS had been doing some ground survey work with the time domain system. And the problem with the frequency domain is we couldn't see through all those thick glacial till sediments to get to those secondary bedrock aquifers below. But this time domain showed promise. And coming off that 2012 drought is kind of when things really expanded with the airborne technology to where we could see through those glacial till sediments and get to the Dakota that we needed to map. But the reason with the technology, I'm not going to go into all the geophysics and the details, but you can get a lot of ground covered relatively quickly between the point hole, bore hole data that you already have. so they could get a lot done. And also, what you end up with is these virtual borehole soundings is what we call them. So every, like, 60 to 100 feet on every flight line, we have a little summary of information like a borehole. And what it does is it picks up the electrical contrast in the layered earth materials. And why that works for us is great is that the aquifer materials are more coarse sediments that show up completely different high resistivity values compared to the clay and shale and non-aquifer materials, which is the fine grain sediment, and that shows up very low on the resistivity scale. So over the years, we've kind of lumped all that stuff above bedrock into the non-aquifer, marginal aquifer, aquifer, and coarse aquifer materials. And you can get like a house well in the marginal, but the main aquifer you're looking, if you only remember one thing when you're looking at these results, yellow is aquifer sand. If you can remember that, you can interpret them. But with the interpretations, they've also broken the Dakota secondary bedrock aquifer into the sandstone dominant versus a shale clay dominant. Also, if you have salt in the sandstone, it shows up very, very low resistivity values. And all this could be figured out because of all of our test holes. So your state geological survey has a survey of the whole state from the 1930s where they've gone through and done test holes on a grid pattern. But since the 1960s, we've also been doing downhole geophysics. So each of our test holes have that same electrical properties only on the 0.1 foot scale downhole. So we can match that up with the airborne results and really know ground truth of what we're seeing with the airborne results. And it goes the other way, too. We put test holes in after the airborne surveys just to characterize those aquifers further after we've gotten those results. So this is just a quick example of a downhole result. So the green, blue, and black that you see is the detail that you get downhole. And then the red would be one of those soundings, those virtual borehole soundings, AEM models that I mentioned. Every 60 to 100 feet under a flight line, we happen to fly right over this test hole. And then the summary of the materials is on the right. So you can just see how, with depth at AEM, it'll be getting bigger buckets of information, and we have it in about 30 layers for this 2016 result, and how that matches up interpretation-wise with what's downhole. So, oops, sorry. I went too fast with the clicker. And now I'm going the wrong way. How do you go back this one? Okay. Sorry about that. So the non-aquifer marginal and then aquifer, you can see where it pretty much matches up with the where the main aquifers are at. And just taking that a step further, this is a CSD cross-section that was done before the flight lines. And that I just want to draw your attention. Remember, sand, yellow, the brown is silt on here, and then the Cretaceous bedrock is green. But that bottom sand layer, you might not resolve that at depth under everything. You can see it on that test hole log at on the AEM resistivity data. You might not see that bottom sand layer, but you're getting the main aquifer. So that's just to show you, like, down at 500 feet, you're getting a layer of information about 50 feet thick. It's lumping. But regionally speaking, why this is so great is this is a line from west to east, so from south of Columbus along the Platte River, going almost to the Omaha area. And you can see the sand and gravel of the Platte River on this line, and then remember I mentioned the glaciers coming in, that word moraine underneath there, that's where it dumped a bunch of till on one side, and then there was sand deposits that were thrust up on the other side. Those pop out, that contrast very well. And then you can see the Todd Valley is in a former Platte River Valley channel that might have been stopped up before there was a glacier or ice there or a margin there. And then deposit of sand and gravel deposits, and it's right on resistive Dakota sandstone, so you have quite a thickness there. And then you can see where the current Platte River is and how there's Dakota sandstone underneath that, too. And then another great thing is we have the Google Earth data sets for all of these, so every one of those virtual boreholes along every flight line, we have all that data, ground surface, aquifer thickness, depth to the different bedrock units, all summarized. So where we're at today, this is a coverage of all of eastern Nebraska, that map we saw before, but with the flight lines on there, and everything from the first days up to 2015 is the blue lines, and then each year that we did an event after that is a different colored line. So Sarpy County got covered down there in the green, that's 2016. Then you had long lines in 2018, and the Takema block started. And then 2020, guys finished a large area covering your whole district in the 3 mile grids, more at Takema, and then also that Platte and Elkhorn confluence. You got a lot of tight space line to get volumes. And then the red dots on the right, those are all the CSD test holes that have been done in the NRA area since we formed in 2006, just to give you an idea. Okay, so the website, we had a huge upgrade in July. Our old one was like the original one from 2007 that we just kept adding more tabs for more years of airborne data. With this one, it's more streamlined. We have a resource browser, so if you hit the projects tab, it'll pull down. You can go by report type, you can go by year, you can go by keyword search, you can put your NRD in. And it'll have the AEM reports separate. It'll have the recharge, the pilot study sites and wells data, the archive. And the archive is in a more prominent place now because we use that on all of our public inquiries. It's all the whole CSD database from the late 1800s up for eastern Nebraska, categorized by county, township, section, range. But the biggest thing is the map button up at the top. So if you were to click to that map button, it'll take you to an interactive map. And at the top, there's a link to the Nebraska GeoCloud, which you're also one of the NRDs through NRA as partnership for that when it formed back in 2017. That's where all the AEM data for the whole state's housed in one format, and supplementary data consultants can put up or take down from there and get access to. And you can get an access, and the public can too. You just have to get a login. And then the CSD Interactive, so your state geological survey, also has our flight lines on there, but they also have test holes and the hydrographs and DNR holes and a lot more supplementary data sets on there. And then you also have a 3D project built for your district specifically in 3D space with all of that airborne data available plus the test holes and the registered wells. So you can get to a free viewer of that, but we use it to build surfaces and work with the data. So if you were to click on one of these lines, it would have a pop-up and you could get to your NRD webpage. If you click the PMR NRD next to the survey, that'll take you to the folder for that line you clicked on for the full report and the appendix. So every line that's flown on here has its own page in appendix one of the report that you can look at. The Nebraska GeoCloud, Jesse Corris heads that up, and he's always improving that website interface. There's videos you can watch on the background of AEM if you have more questions. And then this is just what the interface looks like, and we have a NRA button over here that you can load our data sets on, and I just did some cross sections. You can go on there and draw them with that tool, and you can see for yourself the wells and the AEM results and then the bedrock contours and everything on the GeoCloud itself. And consultants can upload data and download data on there. And then just the electrical contrast, that 0 to 60 scale seems to really make things pop. That's what they're using for the GeoCloud now. All registered wells up to 2019 are summarized into these consistent categories of gravel, sand and gravel, these categories. Jesse Corris and a lot of others, AGF, they've done papers and more advanced things with all this AEM. But up on the top right is kind of what I use as my little summary. When I'm using public inquiries, somebody could call in and say, hey, what kind of data do you have for this area? And then the right-hand side is what those boreholes, like a registered well, might look like summarized next to the AEM. And this is just that 3D program we have that we have built for each of the NRDs. And this is the archive that I mentioned. So this is how it's all organized, and now hopefully, you know, people can get to it. They can also get to the hand-drawn cross sections. So everything that was hand-drawn by the Geologic Survey for Eastern Nebraska is kind of scanned in. You can get to that through this interface also on the website. I mentioned the pilot study sites, so we still do collect water level and quality data from each of those wells. We have 78 wells in those three sites. These are the ones in your district, and we have them down in the floodplain. One of The set 01 EN07 Ash 01 you see there got taken out by the flood in 2019, but you guys went through FEMA and got money to replace those wells, so we have those replaced. We have transducers recording hourly right by the river, and then every 8 hours in several of those well locations. And this is just an example graph of all the wells graphed since we've been collecting data. We keep the Platte River gauge from USGS. That's the one by Lenoma Beach on Highway 6, kind of graphed at the bottom so you can see how those water levels change with the river level. And then we have wells up in the uplands kind of by Cape Heart Road and then Platteview Road down by the Gretna truck stop. Just something interesting is there's two deeper wells that you see plot around that 1120 elevation, but then it also has a perched zone up at 110 feet depth where it's not connected in with the other main aquifer system wells. And then also quality. In the beginning, we did it quarterly sampling. Now we just do annual sampling. This is just a nitrate graph. We keep track of all different parameters and select metals. And then this is just the Ashland gauge that I mentioned, but with the cubic feet per second for reference on the bottom. And we did put in a lot of recharge stations with those initial pilot sites. We threw everything assessment tool-wise at the Atom, and we put different probes in the ground, and we just keep collecting data with that. But we just last week or a couple weeks ago at the trade show showcased our recent grant with the USGS and CSD to do high, moderate, and low recharge map for all of eastern Nebraska as a region. So they took all the AEM, and they got, USGS was even able to get the 2023 data in, so everything we had available, and take that top 50 feet of information and commit it and work with it and get the high, moderate, low, so the red, green, and blue for that. And we found that there was glacial till was a major control on the recharge values. And this is just a visual of a line, and that red line is the top 50, so you can see what's going on. But this example is just to show you that it's highly resistive at the top, but there's no water there, and then you have the pure shale underneath, so it's kind of misleading without digging into the details, and that's the CSD part is they did focus areas in those red boxes that you saw on that initial map. So they dug into the new bedrock surface contours, saturated thickness, water levels, and really dug deep into the details. And that's gonna be finished, hopefully, March 2020. This coming March will be our final report on that. And then, of course, our secondary bedrock aquifer recon and age dating project. We did this a while back, but we do wanna do more of this age dating in the bedrock aquifers as well as the other aquifers. And we sponsor mesonet stations, so we sponsor at the pilot study site locations mesonets, and then we're also planning one to sponsor another one in the eastern Nebraska this year. And under the other is the model building reports, so your district is working with Lower Platte North and Lower Platte South kind of to put all that data together and work to get their model-related projects going together as a unit with the DNR, so there is a place for those reports and things to go up on the NRA website. Okay, so just meetings. We did a booth at the State Irrigation Conference in Kearney back in November, and we did the trade show just this past couple weeks ago. We've been getting to each of the boards to give their updates for this year. And we have another meeting next week on the 19th that we're going to start talking about the project scoping for our next big grant, because we want to go for grant money to do future work building off of our existing projects. And we also cycle back 9150 to each of the NRA NRDs for any assessment that they do specifically in their district that helps us as a region, as a group. So you guys are scheduled to get that back from NRA in 2026. And we just constantly do public inquiries, keep the Dropbox updated, keep everything posted on the website. And, you know, we work together. These are some of the outline of things that we're looking at next with that next grant scope, and working together with partnerships is really what's got us where we are today. So I thank you very much for being part of NRA, and I went really quickly, so if you have any questions related to the update information.
Thanks for your presentation.
The Oakland well sites, is that west of Oakland or east by the divide?
So that whole site itself covers both sides of the Logan Creek drainage on either side of the of where Oakland is. So we have real-time well, actually Lower Elkhorn put real-time transmitters off of our transducers in the wells south of town. So they're graphing those real-time, but we do have transducers in all those, but on both sides. And we have them
primarily in the Logan drainage.
Primarily in the Logan Creek drainage, but yeah, it was designed to cover that whole area on both sides. And we have shallow, medial, deep wells. I didn't go into that, but each of the nests has different wells.
Any other presentations?
Yes.
When you do your sampling for like nitrates, you said you're only doing them once a year. Do you do them at a specific time since that can change seasonally?
Well, we started out doing seasonally four times a year in the first 2 years of all these pilot study sites. And USGS does the sampling for the ones at the Ashland area. And so they incorporate that up into their data sets and that they provide to you too. But now we've moved, to annual for that after looking at the trends for the seasons. But there are things that happen here and there, especially with the nitrates, that it's not like just at the same time we're always going to see that same thing.
Any other questions? Thanks for the presentation. Item number 7, cooperative agreement with UNL Conservation and Survey Division. Katie?
All right. So this one's this contract's a pretty good one. Matches the timing of this is well coordinated. So. This contract is with the CSD for the next 3 years to continue doing and constructing boreholes and taking some more remote sensing data. So where this one's sitting at is a cost of $77,750 over the course of the 3 years, so that's the total. So in attachment one, it has it broken down by year, and we're contracted then to have 1,100 feet of borehole and well constructed. How many boreholes that will be per year will change depending on how deep you go. And so you can do more shallow boreholes or fewer deeper ones. Or you can, and the way this current contract it is set up is so that way we can also do TTEM work as well. CSD just got a brand new fun little TTEM system. So you can basically, it's the same kind of a system that you would that you see with that AEM, but it's on the ground. You pull it around with a four-wheeler back and forth across whatever study area you want, and it does the same sort of resistivity data. And so we can either put in boreholes, we can do the resistivity data, and we can fill in some of the gaps that we have. And that data that'll be collected will be used for the same things that NRI is. And so that data will be used to inform some of our the model that we're making, any kind of future changes that we make, future studies, anything that we really kind of need to know more on the ground type information where there might be gaps. And so that's what this cooperative agreement with CSD will be doing. Any questions?
Thank you for your presentation. We could have a motion on this item.
I'll move with staff recommendation.
Second.
A second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Director? Roll call.
Storm?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
Urbit?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye. Thank you. Item number 8, Eric Williams.
Good
Good afternoon, everyone. For item number 8 about Beltline Trail Phase 4, there is no recommendation at this time. This item is anticipated to return for a recommendation for construction bids in March.
Thank you, Eric. Item number 9, contract amendment with Earhart Griffin and Associates for Beltline Trail. Eric?
Thank you. For the Beltline Trail, we have seen a number of different projects ongoing. A new map is provided. We talked about this last month, I believe. This map is updated with the construction phases that have been bid and awarded. So you can see in the upper right, near the North Omaha Transit Center, phase number 1 from the Transit Center down to the school. Phase number 2 was entirely within Adams Park. Phase number 3 in the lower left, in the southwest, is divided into phase 3A and phase 3B. Phase number 4 is from Adams Park North back up to the elementary school. And then the missing section in the middle, kind of around 40th and Lake and Erskine Park, was preliminarily identified as phase 5, but we don't have a timeline for specific design and construction on that. So this map is available if anybody has questions about the different phasing and the different numbers that go with each of those phases. As I mentioned, phase number 1 was completed in 2022. Phase number 2 was completed in 2023. Phase number 3A in the lower left is currently under construction. Preliminary tree clearing is ongoing right now. Our first on-site construction meeting was planned for tomorrow morning, but is now rescheduled for next week. And that brings us to the update that we want to talk about today. The last time a contract amendment for professional services was presented, it was contract amendment number 2. Between then and now, minor contract amendments number 3 and 4 were approved under administrative authority. There were small changes to small portions of the scope. So there were amendments 3 and 4 that were not presented to the board based on the small nature and small dollars involved. This is contract amendment number 5 that covers changes in the scope of services largely related to phase 3A and phase 3B. We had originally anticipated from the map, Bill, that the phase 3 would be bid and constructed together. So can you scroll down a little bit more to the bottom of that page? You can see that the lower left, it says Trailhead near Walnut Hill Elementary School. That's Hamilton and Military. Down the rail corridor, kind of over between the mid-block crossing, and then up through the land that is Omaha Permaculture up to 40th and Grant. The land on the south portion in 3A was owned by the land bank, acquired, and was easy to move from design to construction. The land on 3B has multiple different property owners and some additional complexity. So in order to move 3A to construction, we divided that phase, phase 3, into the A and B section. That triggered some additional professional services needed from EGA to divide the plans for bid and also to determine the appropriate best adjacent uses for the land in 3A specifically that is not needed for the trail. This was not anticipated when we signed the original agreement back in 2021, I believe. And so the recommendation is for an amendment to the contract to include additional services related to the division of phase 3 into 3A and 3B. And then also additional services related to finding the best adjacent uses for the land next to the trail. When we acquired the land from the land bank, some portion of that land is not needed for the trail itself. We have about a 30-foot corridor for the trail. The adjacent land can be put to some beneficial use. We are working on what it would mean to replat that land so that it could be made available to some adjacent user. We don't have an idea of what specifically that will be at this time. We anticipate that being presented to the board for declaring surplus and then determination about use of that land in the future. But some preliminary work has been needed to determine how would that replatting occur? How would we divide the trail land from the adjacent land? We've had conversations with the planning department about that replatting across, I think it's about 9 or 10 different parcels that would be combined into the trail corridor and then adjacent lands determined to be surplus in the future. So that is also additional work that was out of scope of the original contract that we agreed to back in 2021. The recommendation is to authorize approval of the contract amendment in the amount of $46,780, bringing the total not to exceed to $905,914.54. And representatives from EGA are in the back of the room here. They are the lead consultant on this project. with a subconsultant of RDG, but EGA is here to answer any questions about this work or other progress on the Buttline Trail generally, if you have them.
Yep.
So the dividing of the parcels and potential use, that's just for 3A, right? Is there anticipation that exercise would be done for 3B? Or is it 3B we're talking about?
Nope. If we can go back to the map, I've got a tool here. Bill showed me how to use it. Let's see if I learned. Okay. So yeah, in 3A, the land that we acquired here was larger parcels, the land bank I had acquired from a former industrial user. 3B, there are two mid-block parcels between Decatur Street and Parker Street, and then on the eastern edge of land right here up to Grant Street, and that is a large collection of parcels owned by Omaha Permaculture, which I believe has a new name now. We do not anticipate acquiring property rights larger than what's necessary for the trail in Phase 3B, which is why that land was harder to acquire, because we need them to grant easements over just a portion of their property. Okay. So only Phase 3A included additional land. The land bank did not want to subdivide prior to selling that land, so we acquired additional land at the time, which will now become surplus, and that is the work that needs to be done in the future to find another beneficial use.
And that future would be anticipate when the whole trail is done.
So
we're talking a couple of years away.
Well, so Phase 3A is under construction now, anticipated completion in October. Phase 3B, we tentatively expect to bid in the fall and construct next year. But with 3A under construction, in the relatively near future, we anticipate being able to have sufficient clarity on where the trail will be and where the adjacent property will be. So possibly in the next month or two, we might have a recommendation to declare surplus and then ask for guidance on how to how that surplus would find a new use.
I guess what I'm saying, that to me would be a lower priority than getting the whole trail done.
Oh, yeah. No, the construction is ongoing and for 3A and... Again, we anticipate phase four next month. So we are moving forward on the construction, but this is kind of a side activity. It is not distracting from moving forward with the construction.
Well, but it would be, you know, the value of the whatever land can be used would be better, I guess, when the whole trail is done is what I'm getting at.
The concern about expediting surplus land is that we have seen encampments on the area, and the longer that we own land that does not have a designated use, the higher the risk is that there will be people who might attempt to return to that location. There has been some expense to help find people other housing accommodations and then clear debris that was left on our property. So the desire to declare surplus and move that property to someone else who might use it would avoid the risk of potential return encampments that is been kind of challenging on the construction site.
We'll talk more later. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, we've already spent about $20,000. So.
Yes, there have been some challenges based on other undesired uses of the property that we'd like to avoid in the future.
Any other questions regarding this item? Need a motion.
I'll move a staff recommendation.
We have a motion. We need a second.
Second.
Second, to anyone from the public wants to make comment? Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
Urban?
Yes.
Storm?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye. Eric, I think you're up on the team.
Me again. This project is the Sorensen to Girard Trail. I think the second page is a map. This project is also on a former railroad corridor. This location is east of 72nd Street, north of the Emanuel Hospital. We awarded the construction and had the pre-construction meeting with the awarded contractor, Navarro. At that pre-construction meeting, their subcontractor, Linhart, who was working on the retaining wall in the section, there's a retaining wall, kind of right in this area. It's kind of a steep slope. And so the design engineer had indicated that there would be a retaining wall in the plans. Construction bid was awarded to Navarro. In that first meeting, the subcontractor indicated they need additional information in order to move forward with the construction of the wall, specifically related to geotechnical analysis. This area was a rail corridor for, let's say, about 100 years. Trees grew on the side. The soil conditions are relatively unknown. So The responsibilities of the engineer were to identify the trail and the trail construction aspects and identify the need of the wall, but we did not have additional scope of services for a sub-consultant to do geotechnical analysis. The wall contractor now has indicated they need a global stability analysis to determine how to set the foundation for the retaining wall next to the trail. And so the recommendation here is to amend the professional services agreement with FHU, who are in the room, and also with EGA as their sub-consultant on this project, to include services from Teal Geotech for a global stability analysis to make sure that the foundation around the retaining wall is sufficient to construct the wall and then construct the trail. Secondly, during the design process, Omaha Public Works identified some drainage improvements that are necessary in the area right up here, drainage from the west down Girard Streets, and then in the section where the trail is running directly along the edge of Girard Streets. There's a need to connect to the existing storm sewer kind of in this area. When public works improvements are constructed, Omaha Public Works requires a full-time resident project representative on site from the consultants to make sure that those improvements are constructed in accordance with the city guidelines. That was not anticipated during the original design contract. We did not know that there was additional drainage that Public Works would ask us to manage. We did not know that we would be connecting to the existing storm sewer. And so during construction, EGA will be doing additional construction administration to make sure that Omaha Public Works is comfortable with the way in which the storm sewer connection is constructed. And so that is also included in the modification of the professional services agreement to have EGA on site as a sub-consultant to FHU to make sure that Omaha Public Works is happy with the way that those improvements are constructed. So those two items were not included in the original contract for design, but the recommendation is to amend the contract in the amounts of, $33,528 for a new maximum not to exceed amount of $170,341. And again, I'm here and FHU and EGA are all available to answer questions on either of the two main topics covered by the amendment.
How high is this wall?
It's a maximum of 10 feet. There was a geotechnical analysis done, but it was only borings, three locations of borings along the corridor, so we did have that information. But
and you, by the way, you are who?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Jennifer Thompson with FHU, project manager.
Okay.
For this project. And there were three borings done for a geotechnical analysis, but once we laid in the wall and into the plans, Linhart came on. They decided they would like a little additional information from the geotechnical engineer, which is Teal, which is that global stability test near the wall.
Okay. And the type of retaining wall is going to be what?
The wall contractor will kind of decide the wall design. Type? I'm sorry?
What? I mean, poured concrete, big blocks, little
yeah,
blocks.
Big blocks.
Big blocks. Like, yeah. The Turner Boulevard Trail.
Sorry.
Yes, similar to the 42nd Street underpass on the South Omaha Trail, okay. Large block modular retaining.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Excuse me. I'm frying my throat. So do you anticipate that there'll be additional modifications to the contract for the change in the wall, or is that covered?
I think we're unsure at this time. We've got to see what the global stability test results come out with after given notice to proceed for that additional work.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah. What? So not being as familiar with this, so it sounded like you had something estimated, something was estimated, and then after the estimation, they came and said, oh, wait, I need this other thing, even though they were on the ground and this is, and then there's another person that then the city needs to have that was not identified
And it's nearly doubled the cost now?
So two separate items.
Yeah, but they're all in the same.
So the first one, yes, the shop drawings for the construction of the retaining wall are always done during the construction phase.
Okay.
They're not a part of the professional services that were contracted originally. It was trail design, and there needs to be a retaining wall, so the contractor's responsible for that. In order for the contractor or their subcontractor to do their shop drawings for the wall, they have requested additional information. That's the geotechnical analysis. So sometimes, it was not anticipated at the beginning that they would need the global stability analysis. We thought that the geotech investigations, the borings, would be sufficient for them to do their shop drawings of the specific wall.
Okay.
So that was just a modification requested by the construction subcontractor. And then secondly, yes, for Omaha Public Works, no, we did not anticipate picking up additional drainage from Girard Street when we had the original design contract with FHU. During the design, this became an OPW project, meaning there are public improvements on Girard Street. And so that triggers Omaha Public Works to have additional level of review. And in their review, that triggers them to issue additional requirements in order for them to approve the project, because they will be responsible for a portion of the improvements, the drainage.
Okay, because so that was the part that wasn't, the first part didn't sit well, but then the second part, when we're like, okay, we have Omaha Public Works responsibilities that was not identified, didn't sit well at all then after that, so.
Yeah, and we went back and forth on the drainage design. I don't know if you want to address
It's fine, I just wanted to make sure that I understood it, because it almost doubled then the cost. So that's all I wanted to.
Well, it's a little complicated, but there's newer development to the east. Those homes and the drainage study that was done with that project, when our water resources engineers reviewed it, noted that they didn't capture enough water for that development, so then we have to capture it with our project.
No, that's fine. Okay. My questions were answered.
Okay. Any other questions?
Do we have a motion?
Your motion.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to make a comment? Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
Urban?
Yes.
Storm?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Chairman.
Aye. Item number 11, Water Sustainability Fund Grant Applications. 11A.
Good afternoon, directors. You'll see a number of Water Sustainability Fund applications for your consideration tonight. The applications are due at the end of March, and we, in light of the kind of cut of budget and things, we really wanted to get a lot of our projects in. We utilize this fund quite a bit, and we want to make sure that the dollars don't get cut out of there, or if they do, at least we can show the need for the projects that we've been submitting. So the first one tonight that we have is Dam Site 12. Bill, can you go to the map? And Bill also showed me how to use the pointer today. So all right. So this is Dam Site 12, and so the projects that have dam site, the DS in front of them, what that indicates is that it was part of the original Corps of Engineers study of the Papillion Creek watershed. So this has been a planned flood control reservoir since the 1960s. Some of the other sites, if you recall, WP124, those stand for West Papio, and those were added after the initial Corps study. So just a little background there. So this is Dam Site 12, been planned for a long time. It's 216th Street, Fort is right here. And Mount Michael is just up off this way, Mount Michael School. So we did a 60% design of this project and completed that in 2018. And that we did that in order to determine the land rights that we needed, to get a lot of that information done up front, and also to get a Corps 404 permit, because those had been taking a very long time, and we didn't want to kick off a project and then have to wait all this time on a permit. So we kind of did that proactively. So we've got a good start on the design, and HDR is the engineer working on that. And so we'd like to get approval to apply for the Water Sustainability Fund. Now, the cost that we have left, we have just over $16 million left in costs for the project. We've already spent about $12.5 million on land and design and permitting for this project. So we're going to apply for 60% of what we have left of the cost, which is just over $9.8 million. Now, we likely will not get all of that, but we are submitting all of our costs to the Water Sustainability Fund. And just for reference, we've been very successful in getting those funds for our reservoirs. WP6, 7, WP1, 2, and 4 all received water sustainability funding. So this motion is for the general manager to be authorized to execute and submit that water sustainability fund for dam site 12.
Thank you. We can have a motion on this item.
I'll move with staff recommendation.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to make comment? Roll call.
Urban?
Yes.
Storm?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye. Item number B.
Okay, this is another Water Sustainability Fund grant application, but this one is a small project, so they have set a threshold at $250,000 or below is a small project. It has a little bit different application and review process. Anything above $250,000 goes into the big, you know, the bigger review and a bigger application. So this is a small one, and this is for the Lower Platte River Weed Management Group. Barry, I already went to the map. Thanks, Bill. So this is it's along the Platte River. It's really from like Platte County down Colfax all the way down to the mouth of the Missouri. This is a group that we've been a part of for quite some time. And you may recall that at the legislature there's a bill with the Department of Ag, and it just changed the wording from may administer grants for invasive species and weed management to shall, and this has to do with that. So the funding for spraying Phragmites and invasive species on the Lower Platte River is funded by three NRDs. Our NRD, along with the Lower Platte North and South, we each contribute $30,000 a year. Last year, we upped it to $60,000 because we didn't have the state funding. But the three NRDs contribute money, and then there's a state grant that the Lower Platte Weed Association applies for every year. And so those two pots of money are what make up the dollars that we use a helicopter, we survey, we spray. The weed superintendents use airboats, and they spray on their own and drones. So all of that has been the funding for a number of years. That's been the setup for that. And then last year, we applied for the grant as the association, and the dollars were never distributed. So then all we had was the NRD dollars. So this is, you know, hopefully the legislative, you know, avenue works and we get grant funds and that kind of goes away. But this is a kind of a stopgap to get us through this next year. We're going to apply for a small grant for $200,000 just to help us stretch the NRD dollars so it's not entirely funded by the NRD. So if there's any questions on that, I'd be happy to try to answer them. But again, this one hopefully will work itself out with the state grant.
I move to staff recommendation.
It's been a while since I have heard anybody talk about Phragmites. I thought you sprayed and then had to like mow or mulch it up.
The spray, and we do a lot of aerial spraying, okay. And they don't mulch it up.
Okay.
We've luckily had some high water events over the years that kind of self mechanically removed.
Okay.
Yeah, so we haven't had to do that in a very long time. So.
Okay, because my experience was more out by Kearney.
Yeah.
It's too bad Director Teaser's not here. Yeah.
He'd love to fill you in with Phragmites. They'd give you a dissertation.
Okay. Do we have a motion on?
I have a question. Do we ask before the motion?
Or no.
Okay. Amanda, who these grants obviously save us a lot of money as the NRD. Who do we write these grants in house, or are we hiring somebody to write them, or how are these working?
So for the larger grants, we have historically hired someone. So HDR is working on the large grant. We have done all the small grants in house, the applications. Okay. from the Water Sustainability Fund.
Nice job.
Any other questions?
I'll make the second on his motion.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Roll call.
Starr?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
Irvin?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Aye. We're out to 11C.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Another small grant here for Water Sustainability Fund. This one, the district would be applying on behalf of the Southern Sarpy Watersheds Partnership, who we are the administrating agent for. Quick little background on them for anyone who may not be familiar. The Southern Sarpy Watersheds Partnership, or SSWP, is a cooperative partnership that the district's been part of since 2016. Other members include Sarpy County and the cities of Bellevue, Gretna, Papillion, and Springfield. In a nutshell, the goal of that organization is to manage the resources in Southern Sarpy County, which is developing and will continue to develop quite rapidly as new sewer service is available in the area. So that partnership started this process of trying to manage the area with a watershed management plan. We completed that in 2024. It's available if anyone is curious. And that includes a number of different projects and policies which are supposed to help manage the different issues that are going to present themselves in that area that kind of go alongside new development. So if you're curious of the area or some of the kind of projects and policies overview, I attach an exhibit on the third page of my memo. I won't spend too much time on that, but I'd be happy to come back to answer any questions. And then also, the Southern Sarpy Partnership has a website that you can peruse, and I'd be happy to answer any additional questions from there as well. As far as this specific application and one aspect of the watershed management plan, one of the major issues that we anticipate seeing in Southern Sarpy County is as the land transitions from primarily agricultural, which it is now, to more developed urban, suburban, commercial areas, as the watershed builds out, we're going to anticipate more rainfall being routed to the creeks more quickly, with more impervious area from that build out, more asphalt, more rooftops, things like that. That's going to lead to higher and faster creek flows. Those are going to be more erosive, and this area is already naturally susceptible to erosion due to the silty soil type that's there. So one of the major issues that we anticipate seeing in this area is stream bed degradation, stream bed widening as those streams erode from these flows in the future. There are a number of policies and projects in the watershed management plan that are intended to address this issue sort of in step with development. So that's small grade stabilization alongside new development. That also involves stream setbacks in undeveloped areas. So when new infrastructure comes in, they won't build too close to the creeks. We won't see infrastructure falling in the future, ideally, which has been an issue in other watersheds that we've seen. So that's an advantage of kind of getting out ahead of this. However, there are areas, namely for this project, the city of Springfield, that already exist alongside the creek. So if we look at the western edge of the city of Springfield, we're going to jump to the last exhibit on this memo. We can take a look at the infrastructure that's going to be impacted by the stream degradation that we anticipate seeing. So for the purposes of this exhibit, we can look at those red lines on the side. I'll highlight them here. I also learned to use this today. So this being generally the main stream that runs right alongside the west side of the city of Springfield, where there's quite a bit of both public and private infrastructure. And then these red lines on either side being where we would put a setback if there was nothing there already, but where there are already, as you can see, a number of structures located overlapping, which would be impacted by degradation in the future. And if we scroll down a little bit, there's quite a bit of infrastructure down further south as well. All of these buildings, which have been sort of highlighted here on the side. So as part of the watershed management plan, it was recommended that our existing policies of grade stabilization setbacks are not enough to address the impact that this area is going to face, particularly being a downstream community. This watershed's developing from top to bottom, so it's gonna catch all that flow. We're gonna see degradation. We know this is gonna be an issue in the future. So a more intensive bank stabilization project was recommended in this area to try to fix that bank from widening and causing this impact that we're going to see here. But the watershed management plan didn't go any further than that in terms of studying or design. And so that is the purpose of this grant application, is to support the conceptual design, feasibility planning for a larger bank stabilization project in this area. Generally, that would include assessing the existing bank condition, the impacted infrastructure, setting bounds on the project where we want to implement this, generating design recommendations and alternatives, and producing enough conceptual technical material that we can continue to apply for grants in the future, whether it's federal or state, to support final design and eventually construction. So again, this would be a small project, so it'll be under $250,000 is what we'll request from WSF. And then we would be responsible for the 40% cost share on behalf of the partnership. That would be paid from our Southern Sarpy Watersheds Partnership Fund, which is composed of dues from the different members. That includes funds from all the cities I mentioned before, Bellevue, Gretna, Papillion, et cetera. And then also watershed fees that are paid by development as they develop in this watershed. So mixed use fund, and we're really applying on behalf of that partnership sort of as the representative agency for it. But yeah, I know that's a lot of information. I want to give a little background on the partnership. It doesn't always come up in our meetings, but I'm happy to answer any questions on the partnership, on this project, or on the watershed management plan.
Thanks, Ian. We can have a motion on this item.
So moved.
A motion and a second. Any questions from anyone from the public or board members?
Yeah, I got a question. First of all, thank you for spending part of your birthday with us. Looking good. So, second off, that South Sarpy Sewer Project, I drive by that every day, and it looks like, is that pretty much wrapped up? Is that project still, do you sit in on those meetings, or?
I'm not really involved with maybe the specific project you're speaking of, but they have a pretty expansive sewer plan for the entire Southern Sarpy County.
I guess my question is, as that continues to finish up in the Bellevue, Papillions, Springfield area, I expect more businesses to start coming, or more development to start coming in there, so these grants are going to be important. But what would you estimate the time frame before we see a lot of some movement down there?
I think in the watershed management plan for the entire area, so if we go back to that first exhibit we showed, I think we used a 30-year build-out.
Okay, 30-year. So you'll see it. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, thank you.
Yes, yes.
Any other questions?
Brett.
Yes.
What do you anticipate the construction and design of this can, it's going to be a huge project.
As far as cost, construction, I think we have an estimate in the watershed management plan, but there's quite a bit of infrastructure in this area. When I was taking a look, there's multiple road crossings, a lot of private infrastructure on the sides. So I don't really have a good guess at what the construction cost
is. Is there a commitment with this, because this is going to be a big deal, it's if we don't have the funds, we don't have to proceed with the plan, or are we committed to the plan?
This is just the money to do the design, to do that initial work. We're not committed to the building.
It all starts with that first initial study design, and then it all leads to, the big deal is to build that out.
Yeah, but we're under no obligation to construct it.
If we have the funds, we can do it.
Yeah, if we have the funds, we can do it.
Yeah, and I will say, I mean, that's one of the big things we want to get from this conceptual design, is kind of an idea of what that's going to cost. Additionally, this project is being funded by the partnership fund, which has been set aside particularly for projects in this area. So in the same way that the reservoirs are funded in part through that Papillion Creek Watershed Partnership with a combination of those communities, this is really our focus in this area. We actually have very few partnership-led projects. Most of it's going to be reimbursement of smaller grade stabilization throughout the area. So in terms of large structural projects that we're going to be funding, really this is the only one that we have currently identified, just sort of the unique case. But this will be a big one, yes. And there's not a ton of these all in the area. It's just these areas that were already developed, which is essentially just Springfield on the downstream side.
And they're talking about, maybe making that road different, or expanding the Plavey Road now. Is that all being taken into consideration with all this as well?
I think that's something we'd have to take a look at in this conceptual study for sure. Yeah, there was very little conceptual work done as part of the plan. We just identified this as a segment where there's going to be quite a bit of impact if nothing were to be done and the stream degrades. A lot of infrastructure impacted by that.
Thank you.
That's all.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Thompson? Davidson?
Yes.
Urban?
Yes.
Storm?
Yes.
And Chairman?
We're on item D. Item D, Silver Creek 35A, Terry Schumacher.
All right, good evening. This should be the last but not least of the water sustainability fund applications. The Silver Creek Watershed Plan, it's been around for a long time. It started in the mid-1990s, and we were able to build quite a few structures, really pretty much through the late 90s into early 2000. The last site that we constructed was in 2012, which was Silver Creek Site 11. Bill, would you go to the map? Anyway, like I say, we've built 23 structures to date, and if you could scroll down, I'll just show them where. Oh, okay. Sorry, Bill. I didn't learn.
Did you just
figured that.
All right. Anyway, you can see the areas outlined here in the yellow are the watersheds and little water raindrops. There are where the dams are. Site 34 is up here. It's a pretty good sized watershed, 1,300 acres. So it's always been kind of the twin to the Site 11, which is just kind of over the hill. So we're pretty excited to get this structure up and going. I know the landowner's excited. They're going to provide the land rights for the project at no cost to the district. So any opportunities to receive other sort of funding outside of NRD dollars, we're going to take a look at. And in December, the board approved a contract with Houston Engineering to start the design process on this. And it's pretty preliminary. Obviously, December wasn't too long ago. But it looks like it'll be a significant hazard structure with a cost estimate of $1.5 million. So we're going to have Houston go ahead and prepare an application for this project. We think it's a really good project, and hopefully we're able to receive funds for it for 60% of the construction and perhaps design costs. Be happy to answer any other questions.
I'm new to this. So
correct.
What's a significant hazard structure?
Well, there's a high hazard structure, which a lot of our dams around the Metropolitan Flood Control, they're built to that level. So it's got to be taller, wider. A significant hazard is not as big, so therefore you save dollars. You know, we're up in a more of a rural area. We're working with the Burke County supervisors, and as far as if they're comfortable with it, you know, the concern would be as if there was ever any downstream development in the breach routing area. So it's not a final decision made, but that's what Houston is indicating as we stand here today.
Any other questions?
So you said this is 60% of the cost of design and the construction of it?
Yeah.
So maybe up to $900,000 or so?
I mean, that's it could be. Maybe a little more than that. So it's a significant awesome. Amount if we
yeah,
can,
it is.
You know.
And Houston's help is writing the grant with help from your staff?
Yep. Yep. So.
Go for it. Did you have a question?
No questions on it.
Okay. Any other questions?
But that's still a lot of them. That's still impressive.
I'll move to approve.
We need a
motion.
We
need a motion.
I think you made it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll second.
Second. Okay. Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
Irvin?
Yes.
Storm?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Mm. Aye. Thank you. Item number 12. Dam site naming resolution.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. By district policy and district or in our interlocal agreements, the NRD is tasked or has the right to name the reservoirs that we construct. I will yield the rest of my time to Director Thompson on specific recommendations on naming four of our reservoirs, and I believe we have some folks from the public here as well. But Jim, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. And one of my hearing aid batteries went out, so forgive me if I have to say, WP1 is the first item A. I didn't ask for a map to put up there, so if you have one, that'd be great. WP1 is 180th and short of Fort Street. We just awarded the construction contract the other day. Generally speaking, though, just for all of these forthcoming resolutions, yeah, it's nice to put names to numbers. When I first got on the board, what's a WP and what's a DS, and who created the numbering scheme? But we always have had that. We will continue to have that while throughout the decade we construct more of these dams. But WP1, it's a special recommendation that we honor Marlon Peterman, our former assistant manager, and he's been gone, what, 4 years now, and it seems like I could still see him sitting there in the chair. Marlon put in, and I'm not going to read the resolution or the write-up. It's it's in your handout. It's I think it's on the agenda.
Yes, all the bios are on the agenda.
Yeah, so I won't read it. But anyways, Marlon deserves it. That's the bottom line. So per our district policy, I seek and we have to seek recommendations from the City of Omaha general public and the board for considerations. But the intent of the resolution is that the Nebraska State Historical Society will also provide an appropriate marker recognizing the accomplishments of Marlon Peterman. So I so move.
And a motion?
I'll make the motion.
Second motion.
I have a question.
Any comments from anyone from the public on it? Directors?
Stevenson. I just have a question. I talked about this a little bit yesterday, but what's the process on this? We wait, we introduce it today, and then we discuss it today, and then we vote on it next month? Or
So the subcommittee will vote, and then at the Thursday meeting, per policy, it gets laid over till March for a final. And then during that time, we will solicit input from the communities identified and the general public.
So the public will have a chance to hear what we recommend and then have a month
to respond
next.
Yes.
Time.
Okay.
Yeah. Perfect.
And then you will vote in March at the board meeting to confirm or rename whatever you want to do.
I just wanted to make sure the public realized they were going to have a month so they would understand what we were talking about.
Correct.
And they'd have a month to supply their thoughts.
Right.
Okay. Assuming the subcommittee passes it.
Yeah.
Board meeting. There will still be discussion, but the chair would have to table it. Or there'd be a motion to table for the March meeting, right. Until the March meeting.
We can have a roll call.
No comments.
You made a motion.
We had comments, or that's it?
Yeah, I think okay. I didn't see anybody else. So. Roll call.
Herbert?
Yes,
Paul. Oh, yeah, I did.
Public comment.
I think he did.
Did you? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye.
WP2, the second, is located just west of here. I don't know the exact coordinates. This recommendation came from Director Bradley to be named Sergeant Madbear Recreation Area per our policy. NRD management seeks recommendations from the City of Gretna and the general public for NRD board consideration prior to the March regular board meeting, and also in conjunction with the Nebraska State Historical Society, will provide an appropriate marker recognizing the accomplishments of Sergeant Madbear. And the write-up of this individual, who is a Pawnee native, first American to receive the Medal of Honor. In parentheses is the words of his Native American name, which is pronounced, and pardon me for mispronouncing, but I'll do the best I can, the Korakstishadish. And I got that from the Pawnee Nation in Oklahoma City. But as we do, like we did to Chief
Big O.
We also put the Native American name as part of the recognition of these these lakes and recreation sites should they proceed. So I move with the recommendation for WP2 to Sergeant Madbear.
We've got a recommendation?
I'll second that.
In a second. Any other comments? Public comments?
I guess my only comment would be that if you're Northern Cheyenne...
What?
If you're from the Northern Cheyenne tribe, I'm not sure you would want him being honored with the lake, but... Because I work with the Northern Cheyenne on projects.
Any other comments?
Yeah, that's part of the reason that I was glad we have a month for the public to weigh in on this situation. I just don't, I'm not familiar enough, like some of you guys might be, so.
Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
Urban?
Yes.
Storm?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye. Item number 12C.
WP4, which is the Gretna Lake that's filling, or is it filled yet? If we get any snow, it might be.
No,
but it's done for intents and purposes. Pardon?
Just about.
About done. Anyways, that one, there's a society called the Pioneers Heritage Society to honor great Native American leaders of the historic Middle Missouri Valley. And I read through that, and Big Elk is in there, and some other Native Americans that have made a difference. And this one stuck out to me as a accomplishment for this particular individual. Looking at the spelling, this book calls him Pedalachero. This particular, if you take it phonetically, Pedalachero, the Native American pronunciation, as I will probably not do it correctly, Pedalachero is what I was told. And how you get Pedalachero out of that, I don't know, but that write-up is, again, came directly from the Pawnee Nation. And Matt Reed is referenced as the resident expert, well, not a resident here, but of the Pawnee tribe, Pawnee Nation. He very simply put an end to the practice of sacrificing human other tribe members when they capture them. And to honor the Venus moon, when Venus comes up on the horizon, would say, well, if we honor the Venus moon, or calling it a moon, they didn't know it was a planet, and their crops would turn out good if they slaughtered somebody. And when this guy said, no, we're not going to do that anymore, I thought that was pretty commendable. Again, I recommended to the subcommittee that WP4 be named Pedalachero, as stated in the recommendation.
We can get a second.
I'll second it.
Anyone wish to speak to the item? Any board members? Public?
Public.
Nobody.
Any more board member comments? Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Yes.
Urban?
Yes.
Storm?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye.
Last one, Dam Site 19, which is our Corps of Engineer project. And I'll ask every other month if I have to when it's going to be done. But it's the biggest lake on their next plan of lakes for a watershed. And when we... I wish I had the year, but it wasn't too long ago, when Flagon Lake, Dam Site 15A, was made, our board made a unanimous recommendation. We name it after Dr. Susan LaFleche Picotte. And at the time, the State of Omaha had the naming rights, and they chose through their analysis of public input, like we're going to be doing Flanagan Lake. And so this is an opportunity I would love to take, and I hope we approve it, to take DS-19, Dam Site 19, to honor this lady who I discovered her. There was a book review in the World Herald. I bought the book, read it, and was totally amazed by what this lady did. And I have to highlight, she was the first Native American doctor in the United States back in the late 1800s, and came back to service her tribe of 1,200 people as soon as she graduated from med school. And not only the 1,200 Native Americans in the Omaha tribe, but she had a hospital up in Tecama, right? Bald Hill. I've been to that building, but never when it's been open. And that's currently being remodeled. There's a fundraising going on to refurbish that building. And matter of fact, we talked about that. And you're welcome to add to this when you have director comments. But anyways, I just was amazed. A guy named Joe Starita wrote this book. He's a UNL professor down in Lincoln. I have to read, and I'm going to submit this as a record. I congratulate you and your team for selecting one of your lakes to be named in honor of this amazing woman. There was no one like her before or since, and so it is altogether fitting that she be recognized in this way. Best of luck, and many thanks again for making this decision. All the best, Joe Starita. And of all the lakes, this is, I think, the one I think is glorious to recognize this lady. There is an elementary school in Omaha named after her. Unfortunately, the sign is 145th, and you can't see it from 144th and Maple, so the only people know it's there are the kids that go to that school. This will be a bigger dam site and recreation area, so I think we can help encourage the recognition of this wonderful lady. So I so move with this recommendation.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Board?
No.
Oh, we got some. Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm Gary Bowen, and this is Liz Lovejoy Brown. We are representing the Picot Center in Walnut Hill, Nebraska, which is a nonprofit organization whose goal it is to honor Dr. Picot and also to restore her hospital that she built in 1913, which we're in the process of doing a $4 million restoration. The building will be a community center that will be open to the village of Walnut Hill and Macy and other area communities, as well as the Omaha Nation. I won't go into any more detail about Dr. Susan, but I would just like to underscore that she is one of the most remarkable women in this country. She overcame tremendous obstacles. Women in that era were not expected to go outside the home, but Dr. Susan went back east, graduated first in her class in medical school, which for a Native American woman was unheard of. For any woman, it would have been unheard of in those days. So we're here to endorse your proposal to name this dam site after Dr. Susan. And Liz, would you like to say a few words?
Eonia Ijaje will be to te Mihusan. Wahe Ijaje will be to te Liz Lovejoy Brown. Hello, everybody. I just wanted to introduce myself in our Omaha language. I am a Omaha tribal member, the same tribe as Dr. Susan LaFleche Picot. It is a great honor to hear that this proposal has been brought to light. Dr. Susan has been a great sense of spiritual leadership, I would say, that is still empowered through our people. And I would just like to highlight that when Dr. Susan did become a doctor, she was, when she reached this milestone, she did this 31 years before women were able to vote. And she did this 35 years before Native Americans were even considered human. So this is a huge thing, and I really am happy to see that this is happening. I also want to highlight that I'm sure most of you guys know that Omaha, that means against the current. Niblaska is also an Omaha language. Nebraska, Omaha, Niblaska. Niblaska means flat water. So I think this is a great opportunity to have a recognition of Dr. Susan LaFleche Picot for that reason, and also to know that this area and in that area are areas that we used to travel along throughout the years, throughout the seasons. So we're just here in support, and we hope to see this happen. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. When we do these lakes and we put the signs out, do we have the descriptions of what they're named for so people will understand the story when they come in and, you know, when they visit the lake?
Yeah, we can do signage.
I think it's an important story to share, you know, where the name came from and why we're honoring the doctor with this name. So.
And I would hope we'd have a QR code or however the technology is at that time to further educate the public. Yeah. So.
In the descriptions, they all say they will have a Nebraska State Historical Society plaque.
Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else from the public wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
I was going to say, Rod, did you want to add to?
I mentioned to a couple of board members growing up in Walt Hill back in the mid-60s. I saw that building almost disappear when the tornado took part of the roof back then off of the facility. And there's been a lot of work over the years trying to reestablish to help with the recognition of Dr. Susan. So I'm pleased to support the naming of the lake in the honor of Dr. Susan.
Thank you. I think everybody has spoken. Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
Irvin?
Yes.
Storm?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. That completes my report.
Thank you, Director Conley. It is now 5:27. I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Finance, Expenditure, and Legal Subcommittee. And Director Hubbard, I'm going to ask if you would fill in for Director Teaser since he's not here today. So.
But I don't have to be the chair.
No, you don't.
Surprise.
They went way down the list. Four down. That's a joke. So with that being said, a copy of the Open Meeting Act is located in the back wall of the meetings room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to do the same thing that Fred did and announce the procedure will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the director will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. And we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and actions. And thank you. I need to call the meeting in order first.
You got to get a quorum call first.
Quorum call.
Adams?
Here.
Conley?
Hi.
Hubbard?
Here.
Irvin?
Here.
Davidson?
Here. Do I need a motion for the adoption of the agenda?
Yes, you do.
So, second.
By Hubbard, motion by Hubbard.
Second
by Irvin. Roll call, please. First. Roll call.
Conley?
Hi.
Hubbard? Okay. Irvin?
Yep.
Adams?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
I have proof of publication and meeting notice here in the booklet, and the first item is the Elkhorn River Improvement Project Area Assessment. Mr. Williams.
Good evening, everyone. This is an annual assessment on properties that are impacted and benefited by the Elkhorn River Improvement Project area. This is a stretch of the Elkhorn River kind of north and west of Omaha. The district created a program to collect through assessments money to pay for the repairs along the Elkhorn River in this area. We do the assessment each spring, and then in the event of damage along the river, the funds are available to help to handle the design and construction of any needed repairs. As indicated in the memo, there was a significant flood in March of 2019. We conducted a significant amount of repairs that used essentially all of the money in the fund, and we have been rebuilding the fund since then. The current balance in the fund is $79,443.40 as of March. So the recommendation is to approve the same assessment of $20,000 total over spread over the parcels in the improvement project area, and then send notice to Douglas County to collect the assessments. Those funds are transferred to the district and put into the account where they're held until needed. I'm glad to answer any questions about the improvement project area or the mechanism of the assessment.
Do I have a motion on this item?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Motion by Conley, second by Adams. Roll call. Oh, I'm sorry. We have to ask public first. Is there anybody in the public that has any questions or comments?
There's no one left.
Anybody in the directors have any questions or comments?
Yeah. Sorry. Just have a couple questions. So everybody listed here is the units of land that they owe, and then the assessment dues is what I'm understanding on this.
That's right. So the units, the benefited units are actually calculated based on proximity to the river. There's a map that indicates zone 1, 2, and 3. The closer you are to the river and the higher potential damage, the higher the assessment is. What's reflected in the table is the total of all three zones put together.
Okay.
We do send this list to Douglas County to verify that all the parcels and owners still match the records from last year. Any parcel ownership that has changed since last year is updated, and then the units are recalculated based on new ownership. Generally, what happens is the house is removed from a larger agricultural parcel for tax reasons, so that's the kind of update that we usually make. But we'll send this in, and then we send out the assessments usually in March. So this is gives us plenty of time to get all that work done.
No, I just want to make sure like somebody didn't buy a house and they're like, wait a minute, I got to pay what? Like, you're collecting what from me?
But yeah, I think notice is provided when you acquire property in the
okay.
area.
No, I just yeah.
It'll
thank
show
you.
Up on
it. Didn't read the fine print.
And that's as of March of 25, not March of 24.
Yes. Sorry, the fund balance is as of this month essentially.
This coming.
That's the current balance. Yes.
Thanks.
Do we have any other questions? If not, roll call.
Butler? Yes. Urban?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Conley?
Hi.
Davidson?
Yes. All right, and that brings us to item number 7, MOPAC Trail OPPD easements. Amanda Grant, and we could use executive session if needed, but I don't think we need to at this point. Okay,
we don't need you.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe we can go to the map, Bill. Thank you. So the MOPAC Trail is a district project, runs the lead bridge. It really connects to Lincoln with our partners, Lower Platte South, but runs the lead bridge up through Springfield. And the district purchased the land. It was a former railroad corridor quite some time back, and the trail exists there. So we were approached, OPPD is looking for a new route in southern Sarpy. They're connecting some big power stations from Cass up through Sarpy, and this was their selected route. So they presented us with an offer for an easement along this stretch here of the MOPAC Trail. Kind of runs right along like Highway 50. So there's already a power line along the trail. The land that we own, we don't intend to build anything else, just the trail. This will just be taller and bigger, as I understand, transmission line along the trail. So it doesn't impact our project at all. They've offered, we were provided the appraisals and everything as well, but they've offered 90% of the value of land, which was about 10,000, was 10,000 an acre. So it's broken up in parcels just because of how we have it, but it's really just this stretch right along here. So the total of the 5 parcels that they need is about, I think, 13-ish acres, and
They're proposing to pay us $131,220 for that easement. So since it doesn't impact our project and it's probably the best route for that connection, we recommend approval of those easements for that price.
Can I get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All right, any questions from the public? I don't see any public out there. I'm sorry, directors.
I just want to note that I work for OPPD, and so out of abundance of caution, I will abstain from voting on this.
Good call.
All right, I was going to save me some time.
All right, thank you, Director Adams. Any other questions? I'll take a roll call.
Conley?
Aye.
Hubbard? Yes. Irvin?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes. And that concludes the agenda. Do I have a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
You just adjourned. Oh, we just adjourned. I don't have a motion. Okay, I'll just adjourn then. Adjourn.
At 5:34.
5:34.
7-minute meeting.